Am I right? If you wouldn't mind showing us your face, I think it's Ray Rachel. Have you been here before? I don't recall. Well, maybe. She's still on her break. Okay. So I wanted to talk a little bit this morning about our parsha. It's a very important one in the sense that it's the description of the last plague and the first Passover. It's called Pascha de Mitzrayma, the Passover of Egypt, which was different than the Passovers we have and how it develops. Let me just spend a moment talking about, hold on a second, I'm just trying to get to my text. Okay, so it's called Parshat Bo, B-O, or Bo, Bet Aleph, and we encounter that 10th plague, how it passed over the houses of Israel, and they were finally going to leave Mitzrayim. The ritual of the lamb is described, the eating of how we should eat it. We don't in any way emulate that today, because the Seder developed much, much later on in rabbinic times. But they were supposed to eat their roasted lamb with bitter herbs, and they should do it while standing girded around their waists, in their sandals, with staff in their hands, to be ready at any moment for that sign to leave Mitzrayim. And the story of the Israelites, or now how they're called, Bnei Yisrael, emerge as a nation. And this Bnei Yisrael starts a voyage through the centuries, through the millennia, to add their unique contribution to Western civilization. So it's a very dramatic parsha, and a lot of repetitions. We won't go into the Bible criticism at this point. But before the Pesach action begins, which is quite dramatic, as I said, in chapter 12, verse 2, there is a mitzvah. It is considered to be the first mitzvah given to the Jewish people, and explains why Rashi, in his great commentary on the Torah, at the first beginning of Bereshit, Genesis, he says, why should the Torah begin here? It should really begin with Bo, chapter 12 of the book of Exodus. And it says in that commandment, HaChodesh Hazel Lachem, Rosh Chodashim, Rishon Hu Lachem, Bechodshei Hashana. Okay, pay attention to that word Lachem, which is used twice. This month shall be unto you the beginning of months. It should be the first month of the year to you. Well, it's a bit of a hint of what is expected of us and of all society, all human beings, and this is true from the beginning of time. We are given the opportunity, lachem, to you, to basically arrange time. And from the very beginning in the Torah, it's hinted that there's already an arrangement that the seventh day should be considered to be Shabbat, a day of to basically go into a new state of being from work to rest. So before, the Torah says, before all the drama begins, make up your own time. And Passover, for instance, which we made as part of our first month, seemed to have work. And we do calendar work very well, our tradition. We witness the moon and we chart the sun. And we, in this intercalation, I won't go into details, ensure that Passover always arrives in the month of Aviv, which is translated as spring, but also could be the month of the barley, and that is called Nisan. By the way, all of the names of the months in the Jewish calendar, or the Hebrew calendar, are all based on names of calendar in Babylonia. That's why the names are not Hebrew names. So this led me to think about time. What is time? Well, a simple definition of time is the measured or measurable period during which an action, a process, or condition exists or continues. We measure duration. It's a non-spatial continuum that is measured in terms of events which succeed one another from past to present to the future. And I know I can have a hell of a time figuring out time. What is time when we never seem to have enough of it? The significance of this word, lachem, as I said, is we are asked, and every community from the beginning of time has done this, we are to establish our own measure of time. Now, I've taken time to think about time and how it can be instructive in our contemplative practice. Now, our practice begins and consists of silence and breath. Silence and breath. Taking that, I moved on to look for other possible understandings of time. And I found a quote from a Zen master. Now, I don't know who he is. His name is Dogen Uji. It's a great name. And he says this, and it's very tough, and it's worth spending some time on. But I don't know if we really have the time, but we'll see. He says, being hyphen time, or the time hyphen being, being itself is time. Time is not separate from you, and as you are in the present, time does not go away. Again, very succinct and sort of koanish, and not in the sense of being a sort of a contradiction or a juxtaposition that we have to basically deal with, that being time, time being, being itself is time. Time is not separate from you when you are in the present, but time does not go away. So what he basically says, if I can be so bold, is we need to be truly in time. Now, the arrangement of time within our own being in time, and it's hard to us to keep this perhaps idea in our consciousness because of the fact that it seems to be oppositional, being and time. But I like to juxtapose that with silence and breath. Now, this manifestation of measure of time has been there, as I say, from the beginning of human civilization. And we, of course, know that one of the essential things about time and arrangement of time, I'm in measure of time, is the creation of calendars. And calendars, of course, exist in many, 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 many cultures. Some of these cultures used this sense of the creation of a calendar well, and others didn't. Some fell by the wayside, and many of the most important, potent ones remain to this time. So time or calendar creates what we would call cohesiveness. If indeed the people, the Bnei Yisrael, are leaving Mitzrayim in order to create a new possibility for the creation of a national identity, then of course the first thing they need is calendar. It is calendar more than anything else that differentiates different cultures. Calendar creates the possibility, if you will, of joint communal events, of celebrating personal events, of birthdays and anniversaries, weddings, etc. And by the way, when great powers expanded through the world, whether it was Babylonia or Rome or Greece, they enforced their sense of time on the areas that they took over. So how do we lift our being, which is time, while experience time that is our being? So our practice of silence and breath also are a practice of being in time and time in our being. Many of us, when we practice, hear our own heartbeats, which are measurers of time. For others, silence and breath leads us to intense body awareness. For still others, silence and breath fashions awareness to our feelings as they are experienced. And there's no one way in our practice that will bring you to any specific thing. And of course, all of these different measures or awarenesses can happen every time we sit, and it is not the same for any one human being. So our practice demands of us to let go of time and being, but to take it in to the deep intensity of what it means to be a being, not a doing, as Ram Dass said, we are beings and not doings. So time demands of us some deep comprehension of our very being itself. This is very preliminary deliberations upon time, and I understand that it's something that I do not yet fully understand, but what I've absorbed from this, and hopefully it's an opening for some discussion, is that there is a measure of time within each of us, and each of us have our own time, but we also have larger time around us that we have to adjust to. But this adjustment is possible because of we have taken time and being, and we have sort of internalized it. And I think what we always have to do is that we have to be very careful about the language we use. Sometimes we say it's a waste of time. Someone says it's timeless. We use that word very frequently, and we don't really always comprehend what it really, really means. So I'll end by saying this. Our true beings are time. Time is always within our beings. And through silence and breath, we hopefully become aware of how this operates within each and every one of us. So as they say, as we said in Exodus 12, verse 2, make this the month to you. Let this be the beginning of the month to you. And of course, following that, we have the asking of the children of Israel to take a lamb on the 10th day, to offer up the lamb on the 14th day in twilight time, and to be ready to leave Egypt on the morrow, the 15th day of that first month. As I say, it's not called Nisan, as we call it today. It's seemed to have just the idea of being the first month, which had to be created in order to have a calendar. Okay, I took you a little bit of a ride there. You know, as I say, it's not an easy thing to think about, because when we start thinking about it, we miss the whole point. This is not, you know, it's not an academic idea. It's basically an idea of how we experience ourselves in life. How do you experience life? I mean, some people always ask me, what's the source? Somebody asks for, do we have a source sheet? We keep saying, yes, we do. It's called silence and breath. And once you get that go going, and you see that as the resource, then you begin to realize that it's a constant sense of renewal of our consciousness. And that's really what we have. You know, I used to say, I used to kid my kids and say on my gravestone, on my headstone, I'd like you to write, most people are stupid and unconscious. So they didn't think it was a good thing to write on the headstone, and they may be right. But I said, if you do it in Latin, it would sound really good or something like that. But whatever. That you know, when I experience the world, I begin to say, why is it that we see such levels of deep lack of consciousness, the way people act in the world? And you would assume that if more conscious, they wouldn't act the way they act. And I think part of it is that we basically have this, and I'm not speaking for all people, most people, okay? Nobody we know, of course, but other people. But the idea is that somehow that lack of consciousness is because we really fail to understand ourselves as beings. And that being is that we are in this, if you will, flow of time. And the question is it a flow or not? Not a flow. We are in silence and breath. Do we stop a little bit of time and just use that to invigorate our sense of being? I don't know. That's really the beginning of my road to wisdom. I just don't know. But I had this intimation that there's something important in establishing a measure of time in our lives. And as I say, we never have enough time. We waste our time. And so other things are just timeless. And you'll see in chapter 12 that what becomes timeless for our people is leaving Mitzrayim. And that we have kept that forever so far. And that it's been very effective. To be honest, it's one of the few times you can get everybody around the table. And that indeed is one of the powers of calendar, that you show up on a certain time. As Woody Allen used to say, 90% of life is showing up. And and part of it is having a schedule. You know, anarchists have a horrible time arranging meeting times. Very hard for them to get together and say, well, I want to get together at 9. What do you mean 9? 9:30. What do you mean 9? Give me 8:30. Whatever. So, thank you for paying attention to my meanderings.